Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed. And Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's real Aussie energy. Switch today.
7 minutes past six. Happy Monday, everyone. Hello and welcome to Sports Day. I hope you had a good weekend. We're here for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That is Red Energy. And for Kia, the all-new Kia Sorento has landed. Told on very good authority that tomorrow will be the day that the authorities, being Tennis Australia, the DHHS, and of course, the Andrews government, finally resolve what on earth is happening with the Australian Open. January 18, I think you can put a line through. I think that's out. But will it be Jan 25? Will it be Feb 1? Or could it even go as late as Feb 8? We'll discuss that soon. And what is going to happen with the Australian top order now that David Warner is out of it with that bizarre groin injury that he sustained yesterday? But goodness gracious me, how well are the Australians doing to start the summer against India? One man that knows plenty about that is our new co-host, Bruce Eva, who I must say, Beaver, as you stumbled in here today, I did worry about how flustered you were. Good evening.
Hello, Sammy. Good evening, everyone. Good to be back.
It's great to have you back.
Last day of spring.
That's right.
Last day of spring. 7 weeks today, the tennis is meant to start. And you're saying we still don't know whether we're coming or
going.
It's
quite extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, it's been an extraordinary year,
yes,
hasn't it? So we shouldn't be surprised.
No.
We shouldn't be surprised. But, well, that's big news. What would be your best guess?
If I was a betting man, I'd say Feb 1.
Okay, so I'd say
Jan 25 is still alive, but hanging on by a thread. Feb 1, the favourite, and Feb 8, the fallback date. That if you know.
And I know tennis fans in this country couldn't give a rat's continental, but
about when it starts?
Well, then, because the flow-on effect after that, once the Australian Open wraps up, once the last ball's hit in anger in the men's singles final on the second Sunday, on the Sunday night, I mean, the tour then goes off, men's and women's, all around the rest of the globe, and Australia's not a part of it. But the flow-on effect of just, even if it's pushed back a week, in terms of the tournaments that come immediately after the first Grand Slam of the year, it'll be horrendous in terms of the amount of rescheduling.
And I think you're right. I think Aussie fans probably don't care about that. But what they care about is how it affects school holidays. You know, and the later it goes back, the harder it's going to be for families to get to tennis event. And by the way, depending on the amount of people we can actually get in the stands. And then, you know, what people probably even care less about is what it means for the host broadcaster and Channel 9. But it's a nightmare for them. You know, the entire year is built on, as Channel 7 used to do, Into My Kitchen Rules. 9 now do Into Married at First Sight and all their other shows that have a flow-on effect. You know, where do these 2 weeks come from?
Well, it doubles up as 2 weeks of advertorial for the rest of their programming for the calendar year, doesn't it?
Yep. And the other bit of information I was told today is that some players had asked to be part of the negotiations that would it be possible to actually rent a private property outside of the hotels so you could go into the country or you go, you know, 45 minutes out of Melbourne. You rent your own property that's got its own gym and its own tennis court, and you quarantine there. Well, that was hit on the head, I'm told, and said no. Everyone will be part of the quarantine.
Well, you didn't name names there, but I'd imagine we're not talking about players ranked anywhere outside of the top 30 are in a position to be able to do that.
No, I think you're thinking mega stars. There's not too many of them.
No, okay.
Not too many of them.
Male or female?
I'm not going to answer that.
Okay.
You can make your own aspersions, cast your own aspersions. But also on that, I'm told that Crown Promenade will be one of two or three hotels used as hubs. So we're not just going to have them all in one hotel. I mean, there's probably too many for them anyway. There's going to be more than 1,200 people coming into the country at a minimum, you would think. It'd be spread over
entourages
two or three.
Won't be as big.
No, they'll be reduced. And one of the other things I'm told were raised is, and I'm not sure if this has been ticked off in the negotiations, if an entourage member was to be caught breaking any of the quarantine rules. No, not only would they be sent home, but if the player was still alive in the tournament...
You're heading down a DQ path.
Out.
Disqualified.
Default. See you later.
Wow.
Yep.
Now, that would be big.
Now, whether the players have ticked off on that, this is a little bit like what the AFL was in March and April, Beaver. This is a moving feast. It's moving by the day.
Staying agile, Sam.
Yeah, I think there is.
Is agile the word of the year outside of hub and quarantine in terms of in a sporting context?
Isolation would be up there.
Mm.
Lockdown? Lockdown's probably the word of 2020.
But agile's been used a lot.
Yep. The Australian cricket team's been pretty agile.
A lot more agile than the Indians in the field.
Was yesterday actually a new game? or did they actually just replay the first game?
What about because the sameness about it?
Correct. I looked down and Steve Smith was 98 from 60 balls, and I thought, hang on. That happened 2 days ago. And if Labuschagne didn't slip, he would have made it in 61 balls, I think.
There was a sameness to both games. Similar margin as well. I think, what was it, 66 runs on Friday and 51 runs yesterday. Australia bats first in both games, knocks up a monumental score.
And to your point, India looked equally as lifeless, particularly in the field. Their overrate, they just didn't look like the India that we've come to know.
I know Shane Keith Warne mentioned it a number of times, and of course the great statistician Laurie Colliver is providing all the numbers on Fox Cricket.
Yep.
But I couldn't get that number or numbers out of my head across all weekend either. So the first innings of the series, India in the field, Australia batting first in game one, 4 hours and 6 minutes. And that's a lot of detail.
It's unbelievable.
It is just incredible. I mean, 4 hours and 6 minutes. It finished about 10 past 11 on Friday night, in an era when we keep hearing and we keep getting told ad nauseum that we want to make things quicker and
But Beef, that's
faster.
On the ICC, isn't it? The whole...
Some meaningful penalties, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, actually penalise them so that it hurts, so that next time they don't do it. Some of the penalties they're handing out at the moment, it's just
Well, that average at 5 minutes and over. And that was with 20 overs of spin as well.
5 minutes and over.
And Jadeja with his... Well, there's a big difference between a spin bowler and a slow bowler. Jadeja turns it a little off the square, but, you know, left arm, orthodox spin, darts him in. He can bowl an over in 80 seconds.
90 seconds, yeah, that's right.
Ridiculous.
And the other thing to come out of it is what's going to happen to our top order with Dave Warner. Bizarre groin injury. We're now thinking we're going to have Doc Larkins on later in the hour, 4 to 6 weeks. Forget the one day just for a second. What does it mean for the Test series?
Well, the obvious answer is that it saves Joe Burns, or it ends the conjecture, and it gives Will Pekowski his opportunity.
Albeit not how they wanted it.
No. And there was, I mean, Justin Langer said that he didn't necessarily, when he played his first Test match, whenever that may be, and it looks like it's going to be a lot sooner now, Will Pekowski didn't necessarily have to bat at the top of the order. I mean, this is his first summer of actually opening, isn't it? He didn't open for Victoria in the last few years. So the obvious answer is that it's now would be Pekowski and Burns to open in Adelaide in 2.5 weeks' time. I haven't read the guts of the story, but I did see some headlines today. Did Marnus Labuschagne say that he was happy to open? Was that just for the remainder of the white ball matches, or is he saying...
I think he was saying both.
Both, yeah, which I'm not sure they'd want. They love the left-hand, right-hand combination, even in long-form cricket. So... And I'd have to look back. I mean, the other guy who's now on the periphery, you think, is Marcus Harris. I mean, he hadn't done a lot wrong.
Not heaps wrong.
Had he? And it's like for like in terms of being a left-hander coming in. But you would think, well, everything that has seemed so obvious this year hasn't played out that way, but Pekowski and Burns as the opening partnership against the Indians in place of the injured David Warner would be probably the most obvious way to go.
Speaking of left-handers... One of the all-time greats, I think, or certainly I did when I was growing up. I only just wanted to play like Adam Gilchrist. The fact that I was a right-hander didn't really help me. 16 one-day international centuries. Aaron Finch went past him in the first one day for 17. Just goes to show you how good Finch's last 2 or 3 years have been. He's going to join us live on Sports Day. Plenty to put to Gilly. This is Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed, and we are powered by Red Energy. Welcome back to Sports Day. We are 19 minutes past six. Australia's final one-dayer, albeit the series is already over, Bruce Heaver, is against India. It is live and exclusive on Wednesday from 1:45 in the afternoon. It's only on Fox Cricket. You can watch on Foxtel. You can stream on KO. And our next guest, Beaver, although he made an unbelievable name for himself as one of the greatest cricketers this country has seen, but he's doing pretty well on the box.
Oh, he's brilliant. We speak of Gilly, Adam Gilchrist, who's going to join us in just a tick. Just before the start of the series, though, I reckon most people who follow cricket closely thought, gee, that game three, that's going to be an absolute run fest because Manuka is a very batter-friendly pitch. But with what we've seen, it might be 420 to 400 on Wednesday night. Let's ask the man who knows, who used to love tonking them to all parts. Adam Gilchrist joins us on Sports Day. Gilly, have you been surprised at just the way the bat has dominated to such an extent in the first two games?
Yeah, good evening. As an ex-batsman, what a wonderful sight. It's a sight to behold, isn't it? The way the boys have gone about it, both teams' batting lineups are fired, but obviously Australia have just absolutely nailed it. And really, the difference between the two, and this is saying something when you've got a guy like Steve Smith scoring 100 off 62 balls consecutively, the real difference probably is Glenn Maxwell coming in and doing what he's done to close out the innings. And that takes it from a 330 sort of score up to about 370, 380. But, yeah, it's been entertaining and good fun to watch. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what unfolds on Wednesday night. It's a run feast normally down at Manuka, so it should be entertaining again. Don't miss it.
Let's stay on Maxi. What is it, 108 runs from 48 balls faced cumulatively over the...
It's par for the course for him.
For the first, two games. Extraordinary stuff.
He's just box office. You can't look away when he's at the crease. And it's so much entertainment. And, you know, sometimes if you're sort of watching and you think, Maxi, oh no, what have you done there? Why did you try that? But he's in one of those little patches where everything he tries is brilliant and so much fun to commentate on and to watch. Just as a cricket observer, anyone watching, it's got to be entertained by him. And it's nice to see he's just comfortable, you know, backing himself doing what he does. Whereas for a while, I guess, you know, types like myself and, you know, other commentators and critiques sort of say, well, hang on, that's not how you should do it. That's not the way it's meant to be done. But he's just doing whatever he wants and he's doing it in a very effective manner. So it's, as I say, just entertaining and great to watch.
Gilly, have you been surprised at times just how listless, how lacklustre the Indians have been in the field? And not just, I mean, you could look at their spearhead. I think Jasprit Bumrah, he's gone for over 150 across the two games. But just even, I mean, Ravi Jadeja's one of the best fielders in the world. He'll go down as one of India's greatest ever fielders. Drop catches, missed runouts sort of with attempts where usually he'd take two stumps out of the ground.
Slow over rates.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was going to say, yeah, been sloppy, haven't they? Both teams were sloppy and had lethargic in the field in the first game. And we wondered whether that's, you know, best part of 2 weeks in lockdown with limited training at least. But Australia turned up yesterday and they were absolutely top drawer in the field, weren't they? Some of the catches they took, Moses Enriquez and Steve Smith. But India have been flat. They've been in the UAE for in a bubble there for 2.5, nearly 3 months, as have a number of the Australian players. But then at least I guess the Aussies are back on their home turf and they're sort of in their, you know, a lot of their own family around them, even inside the Aussie bubble now. So it's going to be a tough couple of months for India to keep trying to maintain any standard that we became used to 2 years ago when they were absolutely first class. They were fresh, they were crisp, and everything they did was high quality. So it's going to be a real challenge for them, and they do need to try and find something, be it in the last one day or on Wednesday or the three T20 games. That might suit them a little bit more. They really enjoy that, and that might be the catalyst to them starting to turn it on.
Gilly, a great start for us Aussies in the summer. What now for the top order, given that Dave Warner is out? What would Justin Langer be thinking, not just ahead of Wednesday's third one day, but of course the first test in Adelaide?
Oh, yeah, I guess the one thing about the Wednesday game, this last, I guess what we traditionally say is a dead rubber, there's not a lot of profile around this yet, but there's probably no such thing as a dead rubber anymore because there is a World Super League, I think they're calling it, by way of qualification for the next 50-over World Cup. Traditionally, with World Cups, basically the top sort of 10 nations, depending on how many were in the tournament, they would just be expected to turn up and be a part of it. But you do have to actually qualify and be in the top eight. And if you're not in the top eight, you then got to go into this sort of repechage playoff system with all the lesser-known cricketing nations. So there's every single game of every series, whether the series individually is still alive or not, you get points that go towards this big, you know, league or table to qualify for the World Cup in a few years' time. So there's points up for grabs. So it's important they keep trying to win Australia. The top order, I would think a guy like, Marnus Labuschagne, unsurprisingly, has put his hand up already. I know that from reading about it. And I was in touch with Justin Langer today, and he said Marnus was very keen. Marnus would probably try his hand at anything involving cricket. He's that versatile and that keen to learn. Alex Carey could slip up, and that would leave the rest of the lineup pretty settled. And I would think Cameron Green might come in and get his opportunity in Australian colours. So I think they'd be looking for minimal disruption. I don't think they'd want to make too many unforced changes. And obviously it's just Davey Warner's the forced one. And Pat Cummins is going to have a spell too to freshen up. So they've got a few options there, and they'll just want to keep winning, build momentum up, get through the T20s, and then get to Adelaide, which I think Davey's going to be in real trouble there. I think there's every chance that he might be struggling for that first test match. That could open the door up for Will Pekowski.
And then would Burns still be a certainty to partner Pekowski if in fact, gets his debut? Or would, as Beaver said earlier in the show, Marcus Harris didn't do a whole lot wrong?
Yeah, I would think... they named a... Let me try and get what they named. Just about every player in Australia got into some sort of squad, didn't they? With COVID situation that's upon us. But was Marcus Harris... I'm not sure he was in that sort of 17 or 18-man test squad. I think he was in the Australia A, which doesn't rule him out, given that David Warner has to... we'll have to wait and see with him. But I would think if David Warner was out of the first test, Burns would be in for sure. I think they would want someone with a little bit more experience. I think Joe Burns is slightly more experienced than Marcus Harris. They've both had test match experience, but I would think the incumbent would stay there and support a debutant like Will Pekowski. That's just my thoughts on offhand on that matter.
Still probably lifts the stakes as well for that tour match, which Tim Payne is actually going to captain the Australia A tour match, which you guys are doing on Fox Cricket as well, Gilly. So, yeah, I mean, if Harris could peel off a big 100 in that match, it's, as we've said earlier, things have got to stay agile, don't they, in this...
big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, plenty to play for everyone, but it's like just... The density of the cricket, as I say, the majority of the guys have come out of the IPL bubble. They're straight here. They've in lockdown, and then they're straight into these three one days and the T20s. And then it's a reasonably condensed test series, pretty much four on the hop. At some stage, someone, unknown that we're not expecting to be in the series could get their opportunity. So that Australia A game, for all player types, whatever your position you're in, it's crucial that you just give yourself the best chance that if and when the selectors have to make a choice, that your name is at the top of the list.
We appreciate your time. Just before we let you go, we're speaking to Australian cricketing legend Adam Gilchrist, of course, who spearheads Fox Cricket's
15,000 international runs, 33 centuries, 900 dismissals. I'm just rattling off a couple of
96 tests and almost 300 ODIs off the top of my head. For Gilly, that is. Not
you, for you.
No, thank you. Were you surprised that Enriquez got the nod over the young Tyro and Cameron Green? And also, any concerns with Mitchell Starc's performance? He didn't have much luck, admittedly, in game two with, postcard perfect Yorkers going to the boundary for four and the like, but that it's almost what you get a little bit these days with Mitchell Starc, isn't it?
Yeah. He's never going to be a line and length bowler like Josh Hazlewood, is he? But he was off badly in game one and started to show better signs in game two and didn't quite go his way. He's earned enough credits, enough brownie points to be given a fair bit of leeway, I think, Mitchell Starc over the years and. At big moments, he's always generally pretty consistent there or thereabouts for Australia. So he's fine. He'll just be enjoying the hit out, having not had the white ball in his hand for ages. He was down in the Sheffield Shield bubble, so that might have something to do with it. But I think I wasn't that surprised that Moses Enriquez got in there because we've got to remember Australia were 1-0 up in a three-game series. They wanted to close that game out yesterday. They wanted to close the series out. So to throw the youngster in there to debut on that stage, Moses Enriquez showed why he was picked, I think, with the ball in hand. He bowled a really, really good spell. And he started, he took the air out of the tyres of the Indian run chase with his bowling spell. That would have been a tough challenge for Cam Green when the question marks around him being picked are around his bowling, not so much his skills, but more his fitness and his back and making sure that he's capable of getting firstly through a spell and then pulling up okay. So Cam Green's going to be probably a 10 to 15 year prospect. They don't want to rush it and blow him out of the water straight up. And we got the benefit. Australia got the benefit of that experience in that selection of Enriquez with ball in hand, and he took an absolute screamer catch. So he contributed last night, Moses, to a series win. So that's locked away now. Maybe because of the force change that they'll get the opportunity to play together.
The most watched 2 1-day internationals ever on subscription television, over 1 million in total, 470,000 in game one, 585,000. In game two. The majority of those will be tuning in to watch and listen to Adam Gilchrist. Gilly, we appreciate your time.
Oh, no, thanks. Great to chat to you. Yeah, amazing numbers. And it's fantastic that so many people are wanting to follow the Aussies at the start of a summer. So whether it's on Fox Sports or on KO, the options are there. It's a pretty versatile opportunity to watch it. You can sort of beam into it wherever you're sitting. Feel like just tuning in. So thank you to everyone for tuning in. Hope you enjoy it.
Good on you, Gilly. We absolutely do. Adam Gilchrist, the legend that he is there on Sports Day for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you. I've loved watching it on Fox and grateful that I've got the ability to have Fox. But it was weird, wasn't it? I mean, I know that we knew this back when Seven got the rights from Nine, but to not buy the ODIs and then I guess the strange year that we've had and then the build-up of the summer. And then I reckon a lot of people, and I forgot about it. So if I forgot about it, I'm sure a lot of people did, would have gone to Channel 7 at 1 o'clock and gone, hang on, there's no cricket.
There's no cricket. Yeah, well, you're right. Part of that deal, and we know the issues with Channel 7 as well, with Cricket Australia over the contract, which has still got 4 years to go. But to have the ODIs...
Just a couple of small issues between those two parties.
Absolutely. All the white ball cricket's going to be out the way before the test matches. Yeah. In the original schedule, we were going to be inundated with quality one-day cricket in January, which is its traditional. We can go back to when we were a lot younger and they used to splice the ODIs between the test matches. Remember, there always used to be one at the MCG around about December 5th. It was almost the school leavers match and there was always all sorts of trouble with the youngsters going a bit out of control. But in the original schedule, we're meant to have the 3 ODIs against India and the 3 ODIs, another Chapel Hadley against New Zealand.
After the test series,
yeah, scattered throughout January after right. the end of the Sydney test, and that was going to be because at the moment we're just meant to have finished the T20 World Cup, which was meant to be staged out here. What the final was going to be about a week ago at the MCG.
I just get the feeling, Beaver, we haven't heard the last of James Warburton and Channel 7 versus Cricket Australia.
What you reckon?
Just get the feeling. This is Sports Day. I'll be right back.
How you feeling?
Yeah, so chuffed. What a performance by the bowlers today. We'll take the credit as the batters hitting the winner runs, but they were the stars of the evening, and our young guns just so cool under pressure. It was amazing to be a part of.
You made the big move this season to come up to the Thunder and as well taking on more of a leadership role. What is it like being around this group?
Yeah, I've loved it, to be honest. I've really enjoyed the move. The team's been awesome. Obviously, being in the hub, we've probably been around each other a lot more than we would have been, so we got to know each other really well. There's a lot of pranking going on in the first 2 weeks, and I feel like that got us a little bit tighter. But yeah, I've loved it. I loved getting to know some of the younger players, and they've got a bright future ahead of them, and yeah, just amazing to be a part of their start of their journey.
I have to ask now, who are the biggest pranksters in the group?
Well, she gets away with it the most, Sammy Jo Johnson. She's the one egging the youngsters on to do things, and she's always the mastermind behind it.
Well, now she's a champion, and so are you. Well done.
Thank you. Cheers.
Back to you guys.
You are listening to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Remember to check the fire danger rating in your district. Check daily. Go to emergency.vic.gov.au. Big hour ahead, Bruce Eva. We're about to chat to Rachel Haynes, of course, the Australian vice-captain, but more importantly at the moment, the Sydney Thunder captain. Wasn't great for our stars on the weekend.
Yes, the Sydney Thunder winning the WBBL title. What about Rachel Haynes' fielding performance?
Oh.
4 catches out in the covers.
Yeah. Well, how about just her performance this year? 337 runs as captain, top 10 in the comp.
And bragging rights over her Australian skipper in Meg Lanning.
No, which we don't like talking about. No. We had Meg on last week.
So the run for the Stars across both the boys and the girls.
It hasn't been great.
No. Woeful.
Jai Bond, known to us as Graham Bond's son. Son of Graham. But also the regional talent manager at the Oakley Chargers. They've, of course, got Jamar Ugle-Hagan, who we think will probably go up pick one if the Crows bid on him at one, which they are likely to, I would suggest. Ben Damon to talk some boxing, and we're also touch base with country racing. But
looking forward to talking to Ben Damon, actually. One of the only events that I ever called for main event was the first time that Anthony Mundine fought, I should be able to remember this given I called the fight, he got knocked out in five rounds by the bloke who won the contender. What was his name? His surname was Woods, I think. And Ben worked on that. He's the face and the voice of
he's been great.
Main event boxing. I
really, really enjoyed Ben coming on.
Did you pay the $60 yesterday for Iron Mike and Roy Jones?
No, I decided not to go back in time for my $60.
Garth Wood, of course. I've been reminded Garth. I should, old age. No, I
watched
there was a huge, same. And being a boxing nut.
Yeah, you love it.
I was coming back from a 60th in Mafra. So there was a huge British heavyweight fight on early Sunday morning.
The traffic better than it was today.
Don't get me started.
Sorry, I shouldn't have.
Have we still got Slaps and Sledges the second hour? I want to give Melbourne Cricket Club a clip as well. Anyway, we'll come.
MCC?
Yes.
Can't believe it.
Which I love the MCC as well. Oh. We might get to that a bit later.
Oh, mate, Goffey.
So I taped the Daniel Dubois and Joe Joyce, both undefeated British heavyweights. Sort of the winner would then move into the next bracket to, you know, be in the Joshua Fury type conversation. So taped that to watch it, and actually watched it without knowing the result as live while Tyson and Jones was on. And boxing is booming again, but I'm just not sure. I just wasn't comfortable about the Tyson Jones circus. Anyway, we'll talk. I'm looking forward to talking to Ben Damon about that.
Yes, absolutely. Do you actually think that Mike is going to try to fight Tyson Fury? Because that's what he's sounding. That's what he's saying he wants to do.
Ridiculous.
And he knocked out in 40 seconds.
Oh, crazy! And he'd go back
as much as I love Mike Tyson.
You know, he's admitted that he was, he smoked some weed pre bout and post bout. Oh, he's just a regular consumer of marijuana. He'd want to have quite a few reefers before fighting Tyson Fury, I'd imagine. No, that's just not going to happen. He's 54. This is where it becomes a circus and boxing gives itself a black eye, no pun intended.
Beaver, I know we talked about this a little bit in the first hour, but I just wanted to go back on this. How, as our resident cricket expert and broadcaster, how surprised or unsurprised are you as to how dominant Australia has been in the first two ODIs? And more to that point, how lacklustre India has been?
Yeah, not all that surprised. I mean, should we be surprised about anything in a sporting context this year, given the various levels of preparation that that we've seen and how each... I mean, we're not talking about robots here. I expect India to be a lot better come the test matches, mind you.
They didn't want to be there in the field.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's been such a sameness about both the matches as well.
Oh, yeah.
Can we get a
carbon copies?
Can we get a sporting wicket at all? 27 wickets for just over 1,400 runs in two overs. So 52 runs per wicket, and a wicket falling about every 7.5 overs. Mm. I mean, you may as well have a bowling machine and a hat stand there at the moment. It was just, I mean, probably good signs for Zampa, continued good form in white ball cricket, Hazelwood as well. But, once again, it wasn't. Well, it's fantastic seeing the... The game has never been more beneficial for batsmen, has it? I can remember a few years ago, Barry Richards, when he came out here and was part of our commentary team, and there was a photo taken of him with the bat that he used during World Series cricket and Dave Warner's bat. Yeah. And the look on Barry Richards' face, like one was half a tree and one was a twig. And we're now, we don't play to the fence anymore, occupational health and safety. Grounds are smaller, bats are bigger. Pitches are less sporting for bowlers. I mean, should we be surprised that, 330 is the new 270?
I might stop you there.
Sorry,
because
I'm getting wound up, aren't I?
No, not at all. Our next guest, I reckon, Beav, almost in the old footage of Don Bradman with the golf ball and the stump up against, was it the water tank?
Yes.
Rachel Haynes would make runs with just about anything at the moment. 337 runs this summer as captain of course, the Sydney Thunder. top 10 in the comp. She took a record 4 catches, as Beaver mentioned. We're just going over this because I think Rachel might actually be listening. Most by a non-keeper in the Big Bash history in the final. She also made a nice 21 not out just to guide her team home. She joins us online. Rachel, welcome to Sports Day. Congratulations. Oh, after the whole build-up. Rachel, have we got you?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, right.
Did you hear Sam's introduction, more importantly, Rachel?
What was that, sorry?
Did you hear Sam's introduction?
I missed that, sorry.
Oh, no. We did it twice, started at the start. We can't do it a third time. But in a really, really condensed version, Rachel, you've had an unbelievable season. Congratulations. You must be over the moon. Just talk us through the last week. I mean, you went into the final as massive underdogs, which is fine. We've seen plenty of underdogs win finals. But you must have had this inner confidence and belief, not only in your form, but your team's.
Yeah, look, obviously on the back of 6 games in 9 days, it was a little bit challenging, but I really felt like we hit a sweet spot towards the end of that tournament, and particularly with a young side, there was a real fearlessness about how they were playing and going about their cricket. And so it honestly just felt like we were in a really good place. And to come away and win that game against the Heat in our semi-final, and then carry that momentum into our game on Saturday against the Stars, it was an incredible feeling to get across the line, and something we're all really proud of.
Rachel, I'm sure it was an incredible feeling once the game was done and dusted, but did you have the sense as it was unfolding Saturday night, even with a hatful of drop catches, but as the Stars, red-hot favourites, 3 for 20, 5 for 37, as it continued to unfold, were you almost pinching yourself, trying to keep it calm externally, but thinking, bubbling away internally, thinking this just couldn't be going any better?
Yeah, there definitely was that feeling, I must admit. Particularly obviously when we took those wickets in the power play and probably just outside as well. When we got Matt Siver, who's obviously a world-class all-rounder, it sort of felt like we really could turn the game and really drive that ascendancy home. So, yeah, it was pretty much a dream run for us. So I think everything that could go our way did go our way on Saturday. And despite the fact that there were those drop catches in there as well, our bowlers just continued to create opportunities. And, the Stars probably just didn't quite adapt with the bat either. So, yeah, it was one of those ones where you get on a bit of a roll and you just run with it.
And anyone who's played cricket at any level, just even in the park, some days there's days where the ball just follows you. Mm. 4 catches. I think you dropped one as well, but we don't need to talk about that, although winners are grinners. Yeah. Again, did you have that sense that, hang on, this the white kookaburra, it is literally following me today?
Yeah, it really was. I was sort of fielding a cover in mid-wicket throughout that innings, and I think every time I sort of switched one of those positions, I seemed to get an opportunity in the field. And yeah, you're right, I did unfortunately grasp one of those, but it was, I guess, the story throughout our innings with the ball. Our bowlers just kept creating opportunities, and it was probably a little bit in early with a little bit of swing and perhaps a bit of seam off the wicket as well, but we still bowled some really good areas. And just one of those things where, I kept getting opportunities in front of the wicket.
How were the celebrations? And did you have to celebrate in the hub?
Yeah, we did actually. Obviously, being a night game, we finished quite late and didn't get out of North Sydney Oval till quite late in the evening as well. But, we celebrated in the hub, which was a little bit unique in itself. It actually felt a little bit odd after the game too. We wanted to obviously get really close to the crowd and thank everyone for the support, but you couldn't quite do that either. So it was a bit of an odd one. And same thing in that situation, you usually have all your family and friends in the change room as well, and we couldn't do that either. So it was a little bit odd from that perspective, but by the same time, I guess it was nice that we could come together and just, really, I guess, celebrate what was a successful campaign.
We're speaking to Rachel Haynes, of course, Australian superstar and, more importantly at the moment, Sydney Thunder winning captain of the WBBL title of this season.
Despite being a Victorian, by the way, babe, just to rub salt in the wounds of us Victorians.
Yes, no, that's it. Well, and that was going to be the next question regarding, apart from the minutes after the game was completed, Rachel, have you spoken to Meg Lanning in the 48 hours since, or just leaving that one alone for the moment?
I haven't spoken to her face to face. I did see her at the back end of the game, and she was pretty devastated. So, you know, she's obviously a teammate of mine away from WBBL, and I did really feel for her. I think, you know, they were the dominant team of the tournament in terms of some of the performances that they put out there, and obviously the calibre of the players on the list too. So, you know, I definitely felt for her from that perspective. You know, I know that she was pretty devastated by the loss. But, yeah, I'll touch base with her down the track. We actually touched base before the game, and, yeah, you know, sort of wished each other all the best. So, yeah, I'll be in contact with her at some point, that's for sure.
What's scheduled? What will you do now? I think you're down to play India in January. What does December look like for you? You take a break? It's been a big couple of months for you.
Yeah, well, definitely the international players are coming off the back of two hubs. So we have got a little bit of time off, which is really nice to be able to refresh. So I've got a couple of weeks now to, I guess, get away from cricket and spend some time with family and friends just to refresh and recharge. It's probably been a really draining experience, to be honest. We're obviously incredibly grateful to have had the opportunity to play and get out there and showcase our skills and those sorts of things. But yeah, the hub isn't without challenges and restrictions around your movement and what you can and can't do. So it is nice to be able to step away from that and get back to some bit of normality in your life. And no doubt the players will be taking that opportunity and, looking ahead, I guess, in January to hopefully facing India.
And speaking of normal, about the last time the sporting world was normal was back in March at the Melbourne Cricket Ground with 85,000 plus for the World Cup.
It feels like years ago.
Well,
doesn't it?
That was the question. Maybe I'll ask you, Sam, before I ask Rachel.
Yeah. No. I'll say quiet.
How long ago does that seem? And do you sometimes as well just have to pinch yourself to think, did that really happen in 2020?
Yeah, it does feel a long time ago, that's for sure. It was obviously an incredible occasion, and to have so many people were at that event supporting us, and obviously to culminate in the final and have that sort of crowd, it was unique and a wonderful experience for the playing group. And even so much so when throughout this tournament we had some games which were closed off to crowds. But the final, we had a crowd there, which was a little bit odd in some respects because some of our games were just complete lockouts. So, yeah, it was really nice to have the crowd there again, and their support was noticeable, and it felt like a big home advantage, to be honest, to be playing in Sydney and having a Sydney Thunder crowd there. It's really special.
Rachel, great to have you on. What an amazing couple of months it's been for you and of course, the Sydney Thunder. Congratulations. Enjoy the time off.
Thank you very much.
Rachel Haynes there, superstar for Australia and, more importantly, victorious captain in BBL, in the WBBL, and what a final series it was from her and her Sydney Thunder beef. Now, before we get to the break, go on, give your sledge for the MCC.
I had a frustrating day today. My daughter has just been, I put her down at birth, and she turns 18 in a few weeks, so she got the letter a few months ago, I admit, so I shouldn't have left it at the last minute. She's been offered provisional junior membership at the MCC.
Right.
Continues a family tradition. Both my grandfathers were members. Dad was a member. Fortunately, put me down at birth. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so went along to it's as much, I guess, maybe it's also a bit of a slap or a sledge for Australia Post. So we went to the MCC membership services. You can go to your local post office. If they've got the facilities there for the MCC membership services, have the photo taken, the form's already filled in. Person signs it, so it's witnessed, and away you go. Of course, you have to have your 100 points of ID. Yeah. Well, today we had too many points, so they couldn't accept it. So we took along with my daughter, Holly, we took along her passport, her birth certificate, her student ID card, a bank card as well. And because it didn't equal exactly 100.
No.
I know.
No, this can't be.
Yeah, believe me. So then, it was 140 with the passport and the birth certificate. So no, they couldn't therefore accept it, which I saw a little red at that, but that's okay. Walked away, rang the MCC. Was on hold for about half an hour, and a delightful gentleman then addressed my concerns. Didn't satisfy my concerns, but
Hang on. So what's the upshot of it?
Well, we're up for a late payment now because today was the final day. Not of her to accept her membership, but if you had to pay by November 30.
Well, they'll waive that.
So, I don't think they will.
They'll have to waive that in a year like this.
They will. So, anyway, we've got to, we've somehow got to prove with a document with her home address on it. And
for goodness sake.
Yeah, I would have thought the passport and the birth certificate.
Oh, the world's gone absolutely mad.
Yeah, so anyway, that was, I got that frustrated, and in the end I wasn't computing. But
that's actually a ripper sledge, and if anyone's listening and knows why Australia Post are so ridiculous, please give us a call, 13 13 32. This is Sports Day.
Inside of 10 seconds remaining in the fifth round of this fight. Here we go, and here we go. Little flashes of the old days as Mike clips Jones right at the end of the fifth round. Another round for Mike Tyson.
Well, the scorecards of this exhibition to the former WBC world champions is a draw. Mr. Tyson, what do you think of that?
I'm good with that.
People were afraid Mike get hurt tonight. Were you really afraid in the back of your head that something could happen that might have put you in peril?
I was afraid I might get hurt. I didn't fight in 20 years. He only stopped fighting for 3 years. I'm afraid I might get. Why nobody care about my ass?
Well, that's typical, right?
He didn't fight in 15 years. He stopped fighting 3 years ago, and everybody worrying about his ass.
No, nobody thinks that a giant is going to fall.
I haven't did this in 15, 16 years. I'm not a giant. I'm a beginner.
Did he ever hurt you tonight?
Well, listen, he surprised me with the hook. He hit me with a hook, a good hook. Hurt. Yes, it did hurt.
And back to the question.
Yeah.
Were you afraid of being in peril?
Man, once I go in there, it's all balls to the wall, bro. I mean, I feel the shots, and I know they're going to hurt, and I know he could take me out if it's possible if he came with the wrong one. But for me, man, I'm game. I go to the end. When I put these on, it's a wrap. Take me on the stretcher. You know?
Final thought. Would you do this in a non-exhibition circumstance if you could get a license?
No, I'm just going to do this. This is bigger than fighting for, you know, winning the championship. We're humanitarians. We're helping people. That's bigger. I'm into that now.
Welcome back to Sports Day. You're listening for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Let's get in the ring, or get back in the ring, and talk a little bit of boxing. What an interesting event it was yesterday. 8 2-minute rounds between Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. Mike Tyson at the age of 54 back in the ring. It was declared a draw. Well, I'm not sure that was the overall feeling of how people thought the result should have been declared. Ben Damon is our resident boxing expert, of course, with Fox Sports and with Main Event, and he joins us. Ben, welcome back to the show. Should it have gone to Tyson?
G'day, Sam. Interesting is a very good word for it, mate. It shows well there. It should have gone to Tyson, no doubt about that whatsoever.
Well, so why didn't it in the end? I just don't understand.
Yeah, the way the scoring works in an exhibition bout, which this was, so not officially sanctioned as a professional boxing bout, so it won't appear on their records. An exhibition means that no one is declared the winner. So the referee in an exhibition bout is meant to just, at the end of it, say, well done, everyone, hold up both of the fighters' hands, and everyone moves along. But because this was such a big event, a pay-per-view event, something that they wanted to be able to bet on and have a betting partner for, and something that they wanted the fans to be leaving quite satisfied in, they needed to have a winner. So the WBC thought, in all of their wisdom, let's just get three celebrity judges, three former champions, to give their scores, and we'll go from what they think and we'll declare a winner that way. So they did that. Unfortunately, they chose some that may not have known what they were watching. Vinny Pacienza, a really interesting man in his day, great fighter, but clearly has a massive problem of some sort in watching boxing, or was just having a huge day on the drink, because he came up with a scorecard that just didn't make any sense at all. 80-76, he found it for Roy Jones Jr., which, if you know how boxing scoring works, then that doesn't even make sense, that card. Yep. But he's given every round either a draw or to Roy Jones, so he doesn't know what he's watching. Chad Dawson gave it a draw, so he's got no idea. And Christy Martin was the other one who got it right. So, yeah, it's a real shame for those who had a bet on the fight, and it's a shame that it's taken a bit of a gloss off the event, because other than that, the main bout was not too bad.
It's funny, Ben, because, you know, the great sport of boxing is not adverse to the odd scoring controversy over the years. And sometimes, I know this one doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but sometimes the sport doesn't do itself any favours.
Oh, 100%. It can't get out of its own way. We saw that a few weeks ago with Andrew Maloney getting robbed blind against Joshua Franco in a world title fight in Vegas. But there's always been an argument as well, which is probably dead now, that the best judges would be ex-boxers, that we should get rid of the judges and put some ex-boxers around the ring and they can make up their mind and decide who's won. Well, no, we shouldn't do that because one of them might be Vinny Pacienza and it may end up being an absolute class action every week. So if we've learnt something, it's that. Let's not go with the ex-boxers as judges. Let's get some professional judges in there and do it the right way. And even if they do get it wrong more often than they should, they'll do a bit better than they did.
All right, let's move on. It looks like Roy Jones is going to go back into retirement, although I might be speaking for him. Mike Tyson, where to now?
Yeah, he wants to keep going, Mike Tyson, no doubt about that. You could see afterwards he was trying to talk Roy into continuing on, but I think Roy knows it's not his go. He looked gassed, to be honest, after about half of the second round, Roy Jones, and held on a lot after that. He just didn't have the strength to go with Mike Tyson in that fight. But in terms of who Mike fights next, well, I interviewed him a couple of weeks ago, and I suggested Evander Holyfield, his great rival in professional boxing, would be the really obvious choice. And I think still that will be the way that he goes. But he said to me in that interview, no, I want to have an exhibition bout with Anthony Joshua or Tyson Fury. So the men who currently have all of the heavyweight belts. Not a smart idea, I don't think, for Mike Tyson at 54 years of age. If it was going to be a hardcore exhibition with a ref that was going to jump in and save him each and every time, it might be okay. But otherwise, that would be extremely unwise. But yeah, I just think that Evander Holyfield's probably the one. It's a bigger rivalry, a bigger name in a heavyweight sense, and probably a bigger event than what we saw yesterday if they could get the two of them to do it for what would be a third time.
I'm just trying to picture in my head Mike Tyson in the ring against Tyson Fury. And as much as I love Mike, I just don't know how that would end.
It would be an incredible build-up, though.
Mike Tyson
and Tyson Fury, who was, of course, named after him, and who, much like Mike Tyson, is completely and utterly mad. So it would be a fascinating build-up, but I just don't think it'll happen, and I don't think it should. I think that's when we get into really nasty sort of territory. But then again, both Tyson and Fury have previously been in WWE, so they know how to work within the script, essentially. Maybe that's the way you'd have to do it. You couldn't have it as anything meaningful if it was Fury or Joshua, because quite simply, they're going to knock him out.
Yeah, and pretty early, you would think, given the pace and ferocity. Hey, you mentioned Andrew Maloney before. What's the latest with his appeal over the headbutt that wasn't?
Well, I can tell you the latest with Andrew Maloney. He's in a hotel room, stuck with his brother, still doing quarantine in Sydney. They've been stuck there alongside each other since they arrived back in the country. Two double beds in the one room. They're pretty much touching each other, the double beds. Not much floor space either. A terrible couple of weeks for the poor Maloney twins after both ultimately being denied their world title aspirations over there in Las Vegas. Maloney, Andrew, has gone on with their appeal. They haven't heard anything yet. I don't think it'll turn out that they do get that world title declared in their favour. I think what'll happen is they will have a rematch, so a third fight between Andrew Maloney and Joshua Franco. Bob Arum told me last week he's going to bring that fight to Australia. I hope that's the case, because Andrew Maloney deserves to be a world champion for a second time, and he deserves to have that opportunity here in Australia in front of his own fans. It'd be a really big event for him if Bob Arum can do the things that he's talking about, and a really big event for Australian boxing too, so fingers crossed that can happen.
What would be our next big bout? Would we have one before that in this country?
Oh, we've got a massive bout coming up on December the 16th. Tim Zhu in action for the next time.
Of course.
He's fighting against Bowen Morgan, the world-ranked Kiwi. But co-main on that bout, on that fight night, is Paul Gallen against the UFC legend Mark Hunt. So a massive heavyweight fight, which will get everyone pumped at Bankwest Stadium in Sydney. So a stadium fight, a big outdoor event, live on Main Event on Wednesday the 16th of December. I can't wait to call the action that night, because I think there's going to be incredible fireworks in that fight between those two big fellas, and then we get to see Tim Zoo take the next step towards superstardom in a career that is just going on and on and going up so fast.
And I cannot wait to get home from radio and get main event and just settle in for the night. Ben, always great to chat. Some really interesting stuff in there. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Sam. Talk to you soon, mate.
Ben Damon there from Fox Sports and Main Event. He is one of the leading voices of boxing in this country, and he's there for Australian Made. Shop for authentic Aussie products. You can choose Australian Made. This is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Day. You're listening for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. The draft is not far away, although it's a really interesting draft this year. Some have called it the blind draft. Of course, COVID-19 has thrown out a lot of things in world sport, including the under-18s. How are clubs going to know which players to pick? We haven't seen a lot of them play. Now, Jai Bond, a lot of you will know, is the regional talent manager with the Oakley Chargers. They've got a very nice crop coming through this year. And our 3RW listeners will better know him as the son of the great Bondy, Graham Bond. Jai, welcome.
Hey, Sam. How you going, mate?
I'm really good. The better question is, how are your kids going? They're kids soon to be men, and I know it's been a weird year, but on paper, it's a really good crop that Oakley has produced this year as we head into the draft.
Yeah, no doubt. We're super fortunate to again have another great crop of potential draftees, and you know, they, as you asked, how they're going, I think they're going fine. It's been a really tough year on these young men with lack of football and school and whole uncertainty. But to be honest, our crop are excited about what could possibly happen in the next 10 days with their football future, mate.
I'm sure they are. And we'll get to some of those individuals shortly. But just with the year, Bondy, what's it been like for you? How have you managed to stay in contact with them?
Yeah, mate, it's been a super difficult year. And I think across the board of all sports, especially community and the NAB League, football leagues. Look, we had an up and down start. We were going to start, then we stopped, and then obviously we had the total league shutdown. So we kind of reverted back to satellite group trainings, you know, liaising with the players and parents, agents, managers, AFL clubs via Zoom as everyone took up the Zoom sessions, but basically just reaching out, providing any sort of support, training, well-being programs for all our boys and girls. So to their credit, mate, they've been fantastic. I feel like they haven't really missed a beat with their football training. They're all put themselves in a position where they're going to be fine to head into an AFL club. And it gave them an opportunity, I guess, to focus on their school and finish that part of their journey, which sometimes can be quite problematic with so many competing priorities. And you know, we're fortunate enough to, like you said earlier, have a really strong crop of kids, you know, potentially going to be drafted.
Yeah, led by one Jamar Ugal-Hagan. He could be pick one if the Crows bid on him. Seen lots of highlights, Bondy. I've never had the pleasure of seeing him play live, but I've read all the plaudits about him, and there are plenty. Tell us what makes this young man so special.
Yeah, look, I can't speak highly enough of Jamara, not only as a footballer, but of a young man. He's a fantastic character. He came into our program around 2 years ago. He was quite shy and quiet, but he really, really, you know, started to enjoy the program. You know, the kids gravitating to him. The staff loved him, not only for his on-field, I guess, talents, freakish talents, let me tell you that, but also his character, mate. He's a wonderful guy. I really wish him all the best, and no doubt, whoever takes him, whoever bids on him, and there's a fair chance he'll end up at the Western Bulldogs. But I tell you, the fans are going to have something to look forward to and something to you know, to light up their imaginations. And that forward line, the Western Bulldogs, if he goes there.
Yeah, absolutely, alongside Aaron Norton. He's been compared a lot to Buddy, Bondy. Is that fair? I mean, when you say Buddy, I'm just talking about not what his career has been. I think if anyone wants to have a quarter of the career he's had, they'll be happy. But I just mean athletically and physically.
Yeah, look, he's certainly got a fantastic athletic build and makeup. You know, he's about, you know, 196, 197 centimetres tall. He's got an aerobic capacity. His endurance is second to none, and his leap and his speed are phenomenal for an athlete of his size. But his awareness of the game and his ability to, I guess, take the ball at its highest point is something that, I guess, sets him apart from most others and potentially even Buddy. I mean, the way he attacks the ball and the contest is something that I really like from Mara. He doesn't like to get beaten. He brings other players into the game. He certainly knows where the goals are. We played him down forward, and he's electric around goals, but we also played him down back, so he's versatile.
Mm.
I hate to make comparisons. I think Jamar is going to be his own player,
yep.
But even to have those early comparisons shows what a talent he's going to be.
Yeah, we're all excited to see him play wherever he ends up, but as you said, a fair chance at the Dogs. You've got Will Phillips and Finn McRae. Now, we've had Will Phillips on this show the night before his geography exam. He's a lovely young man. Finn McRae, I know a fair bit about through his days at Xavier College. Tell us about those two and where you think they'll thrive in the sense of position.
Yeah, look, and you said it there. Will's a lovely young man, and so is Finn. You know, Finn, they're both great kids. They're both fantastic footballers. You know, Will's a certainly going to be a leader in the AFL system as he grows and develops. They're both midfielders. Obviously, Will's more of an inside mid, really racks up the possessions, works both ways. He can really bring other players into the game. He's a single-minded young man. He certainly knows where he wants to be, works hard, but he's a fantastic character. And as is Finlay, you know, we're blessed at the Chargers to have such a wonderful bunch of young men and young women in our program. But they're two of the best midfielders, I think, running around in this year's sort of potential draft. Finlay's more of an outside mid. He's got wonderful skills, not unlike his brother, Jackson. I think he'll be certainly ready for the AFL system, very clean hands, and I think he's more than capable of fitting into that AFL environment. He's got a bit of character about him. He's very charismatic, and no doubt the fans will love both those players at whatever AFL club they end up at.
Have you got some players, Bondi, just because of the weird year, that you're sitting there thinking, geez, I wonder if a club takes a chance on him? I mean, I guess you ask that question every year, but this year in particular, have you got a group of players that you're just wondering, like, it could go either way?
Yeah, I think, you know, with such a weird year, and I think we were fortunate that we played so many bottom age players in the terms of the NAB League. Bottom age is a 17-year-old growing into their draft year. So last year, all these young men played in our premiership team. We played a lot of them, so really sort of, I guess, not knowing how this season would pan out, but the way it did, I guess that's why a lot of these AFL clubs are looking at these young men,
yep,
knowing what they did produce for us last year. So we're very fortunate there, but you've got guys like Reef McGuinness, Bailey Laurie, Connor Stone. You know, there could be potentially kids pulled out that haven't necessarily got that, you know, high praise or plaudit so far, like a Lockie Jenkins or a Giorgio Varagiannis or a Ned Moyle, is a young, almost 7 foot tall kid. So you just never know whether a club's going to take a punt on these kids, knowing that, you know, they could potentially play next year and really rise up that draft board,
yeah,
or potentially try and snaffle them now. But I guess that'll be determined on where they fit in the draft and who's available, mate.
We're speaking of Jai Bond. He's the regional talent manager with the Oakley Chargers. They're always producing great young athletes. Speaking of the word great, plenty of great father-son prospects coming up for you in the next couple of years. I speak of the names of Rioli, Wanganeen, Silvani and Darcy. Fair crop there.
Yes, mate. We're very fortunate. It's always been a very good region for father-sons. Young Morris is in this year's draft as well, so I think he's nominated Richmond, so there's potentially going to be,
yep,
young Morris following his father there. But next year, yeah, we've got young Nick Dacos, I think, which we didn't mention there, and he's a super talent.
Of course, we missed the biggest one.
Yeah, so we're really excited to see what he can do next year, and he's a wonderful kid. Young Sam Darcy, Harrison Freeze, another one this year, Tony's son, who's eligible for, yep, this year's draft. So, and young Tex Wanganeen. So we're certainly fortunate in that area. And it's just good to be able to have that alignment with the fathers and sons and father daughters moving forward and that alignment, because it does, you know, give those kids an added opportunity, but it also provides that, I guess, added spotlight to them that some other kids don't have going through the program. So I guess it works both ways.
Bondi, we've seen a few Riolis come through the system. I think every one of them that's played our great game, we've used the word special. Has Morris got a bit of that?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. He's a wonderful kid. We didn't really get to see him suit up for the Chargers this year, but we were really looking forward to him, you know, providing some of that Rioli magic in potentially in our forward line. We and he was playing up at St Mary's during our pre-season. So again, we didn't get to play him in our pre-season matches, but he was most definitely going to be in the team round one. And watching him at training, you know, there's times when I guess it's synonymous with the Rioli name, when the pressure lifts, when the tempo lifts, you know, you could see Morris lifting as well. So no doubt, I think he'll follow in those father's footsteps and hopefully provide some excitement, you know, whichever AFL club he gets to as well.
Oh, geez, that's pretty exciting when you're a Richmond fan. You've won three of the last four flags and one. Morris Rioli Jr. is going to roll into your football club. That is sensational. Bondi, great to chat. It's going to be such an interesting draft for so many different reasons, but judging by what I've read, what I've seen in tonight's conversation, it's going to be a great draft for the Oakley Chargers yet again. Well done on the year, albeit in strange circumstances, and we'll chat again soon.
Thank you, Matt. Very much, Sam.
Jai Bond there, the regional talent manager with the Oakley Chargers. What an interesting draft it's going to be. How about some of those names, by the way? Dacos, Rioli, Wanganeen, Silvani, Darcy. Quite incredible. This is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Day. You're listening for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. If you want to get back to the country, you can explore Victoria with Country Racing. Visit countryracing.com as we welcome in Maggie Payne from Country Racing Victoria. Maggie, welcome to you. Spectators back this weekend at the country races at Yarra Valley and Warrnambool.
Yeah, it was a big weekend for us, Sam. It was good to have people back on course and some kind of normality and hopefully what we can expect to the future. So it was a big weekend and a step forward, as I said, and looking forward to, you know, spending a day at the country races across the whole summer and working within, obviously, all the framework, but exciting step forward.
And it's just going to get bigger and better. The Pakenham Cup is on Saturday and there's races at Stawell and Balnarring, and then you've got the Werribee Cup on Sunday.
Yeah, action-packed weekend for us, and all of these race meetings will have crowds. At the moment, it's a cap of 500 spectators, so jump on the website. Head to the website and they'll have all the ticketing information and how we can have the COVID-safe event. But yeah, it's a busy weekend and we really come into our own with Balnarring races, as you said, picnic racing heating up and lots to look forward to over the coming weeks.
Any chance of that cap of 500 lifting this week?
Yeah, so how it's working at the moment, clubs have to submit an application and they determine it based on the complexity. So anything over 500 has to be approved and there's a bit more of a turnaround. So there's definitely holding out hope that before Christmas we can get up, you know, a few thousand on course, and especially the metropolitan clubs will be looking for a few more numbers. So in the coming weeks, I expect that to increase if we keep doing all the right thing. And yeah, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed, and it will be great either way. Good on you, Maggie. Maggie Payne there from Country Racing Victoria. You can get all the latest updates at country.racing.com. That does it for us tonight on Wilson Homes, on Sports Day for Wilson Homes, rather. We will be back, Beaver and myself, for a big edition of Sports Day tomorrow from 6.